Flash, this is death calling. My first quadcopter flying drunk onto the White House lawn, locking down LastPass with two-factor authentication. The FCC did something nice for travelers, a web server in your pocket. All that and more coming up on Tech Thing. Tech Thing is brought to you by viewers like you. If you get value from the show and would like to support us directly, please consider contributing at patreon.com/techthing.
Hey, I'm Shannon Morse.
And I'm Patrick Norton.
And this is Tech Thing, where we make technology behave.
At least on the good days. So we generally don't cover Kickstarter projects. There are
too
many
true.
Of them. But we don't run into that many Kickstarter projects where they could actually hand us a working product to play with. This is Eggsite's Egg.
What?
Yeah.
It looks like a little thing I could skip on the water at the lake. I can't do that.
No.
Please?
No. Oh. So, and I'll tell you why. So on one hand, it's a place to dump your pictures when your phone gets full.
Cool.
On the other hand, it's a battery-powered web server that fits in your pocket. There's a little Intel Atom CPU. It'll have 64 to 256 gigabytes of storage. Runs the Tizen OS. Yes, that's the Linux thing that Intel invented that's now at Samsung. This is actually a 320 by 240 touchscreen, and you can share photos, videos, or other files locally or over the web. You're going to need some type of
Wi-Fi, right?
Yes.
Okay.
If you want to, not locally, right? Because this will act, you can basically connect to this directly.
Oh.
You can do an ad hoc group, have a bunch of phones connect to it
to
share files back and forth. But if you want to do internet sharing, you're going to need to attach it to the internet. I'm still thinking about the whole YouTube interviewing the president thing.
Oh gosh.
And then the media reaction. No, I think it was actually pretty awesome. The media reaction to
that
it
was pretty cool.
Was pretty pathetic.
I watched it.
it's in this world we live in. It's changing. But the idea, right, is that your photos are on this instead of your vacation photos being up on Facebook or on iCloud, where either somebody accidentally shares your beach photos with half the universe, or it gets hacked and you suddenly realize your beach photos have been shared with half the universe. But that's kind of the idea that you have control over this, assuming you don't lose it. So it's interesting, right? This is a little 2.4-inch 320 by 240 touchscreen, and it's kind of funny because it works, but let's see if I can get it up here.
That looks like it would be hard to use with your big hands.
Well, it's easy to use until you go to type in a password.
Yeah,
and it's pretty funny.
See, this is when you need nails like I have.
I don't know if nails would even
very
do
handy
it.
Whenever I'm typing in tiny passwords.
Well, there's a phone app for it, which is good.
Okay.
It's interesting, right? So you can sort of log into the web server, you can control it. I'm just now getting to play around with it, right?
Yeah.
But you can wirelessly connect to it. You can plug a USB cable into it to transfer your photos. They're claiming 12 hours of battery life on this.
Wow, that's pretty good.
So you can have this in your pocket connected to your phone and walking around sharing files, which is kind of a trippy thought. I'll try to look at the right camera today too.
I wonder if that would be useful for when I go traveling abroad.
That's a big part of it. Because, you know, it's funny, right? So this is 128 gigabytes of memory because I just went for it.
Yeah.
My last phone had 8 gigabytes of memory on board, and I could add SD cards. And, you know, it's interesting. $200 for a 64 gigabyte egg, $249 for a 128 gigabyte egg, $399 for a 256 gigabyte egg, unless you get an early bird deal. Yeah, it is. But we're going to look at this more in depth and some of the options, say Seagate's Wireless Plus, which only has a web interface, doesn't have a screen, but gives you like a terabyte of storage, right? But you're not going to connect your phone. We'll talk about this.
And it's currently on Kickstarter, so people can find it over there.
Yes.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. So they're almost $18,000 in their first day.
Good for them.
They launched yesterday.
Oh, that's awesome.
But they need to make $100,000. It's interesting. I thought the idea, though, of having a little Tizen Linux web server in your pocket.
It's cute.
It is cute.
I like Tizen. I'm a fan. So moving on, one more nail in the coffin of Flash. YouTube now defaults to HTML5. Woot woot! At least in Chrome, which I use, IE 11, Safari 8, and in beta versions of Firefox. Also, getting ABR, or adaptive bitrate streaming, online was the last major key, though Google's really excited about that, using its OpenVP9 codec, which they claim delivers higher quality video resolution with an average bandwidth reduction of 35%.
That's a quote, by the way.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's a nice quote.
Well, they're also claiming that videos start like 15 to 80% faster, depending
really
on the more
handy.
Clogged the network is, the faster their videos are going to start.
That'll be nice, especially if you live in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Which I used to. Not fun. And I'd really like to see something like this happen on Netflix. Just saying.
Just saying. Well, it's funny you should mention that, right? Because a big thing that they also announced, because you go to the article, it's YouTube Engineering and Developers Blog.
Cool.
And right down here, encrypted media extension and common encryption. So flash, silver lights, mm-hmm. and content protection. Like, let me quote, in the past, the choice of delivery platform, flash, silver light, et cetera, and content protection technology, Access Play Ready, were tightly linked as content protection was deeply integrated into the delivery platform. And what they're saying is everything was proprietary.
Yeah.
And everything was locked down in that way. HTML5 is open. It'll basically run in a browser or anything else, which means they expect this to be adopted by television and other places. They're Yay. Claiming they're ready for 4K, that they're going to use less bandwidth for 60 frames per second 4K. It's interesting. It is a step forward, but people have to actually adopt it.
It's big news.
Yeah.
Yay.
Speaking of which, we don't talk about business news, but wow, Apple made $18.04 billion $18.04 billion in profit of 2015. What's crazy about that is previously it had been like a Russian gas company, a Russian refinery oil company
wow.
that had it, right?
And they
right?
had the best profits yeah, of all companies know, in the history.
Yeah,
the
oil
world.
Companies have done these like $13 billion, $16 billion yeah. quarters. But apparently...
Wow.
I helped Apple make bank this quarter. So
it was all because you purchased your iPhone 6.
No, I just helped. it's kind of cool. Meanwhile, this is actually much cooler. The FCC actually told hotels they can't block Wi-Fi hotspots.
Yes.
Period.
Yes.
Not even to make you use their crappy overpriced hotel Wi-Fi or to make their overpriced crappy hotel Wi-Fi work better, period.
Now, I believe there was something that happened with this. By the way, thank you, FCC, and I never thought I would actually say that.
It's nice.
But I believe something happened with Marriott maybe last year, where they ended up going up to court because right. they were blocking Wi-Fi hotspots.
Right.
So I think this must have happened because of that.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. them and other people. I think this is the commission document, public notice, enforcement advisory. Quit it!
Oh, my gosh. That's yeah. hilarious.
Yeah, my name, Marriott International, right there. So in any case, that's yeah. cool.
It is cool.
That's really cool.
Meanwhile, if you've ever wanted your fitness tracker to, say, turn up the heat when you wake up, or unlock your front door, or turn lights on and off while you're actually just wearing it on your wrist, you'll be able to do that. I'm excited to hear about these plans from Misfit. I just got to check out their wristband. It's called a Flash.
Right.
Not bad for a one-button device at all.
With a bunch of little LEDs.
Yeah, it's got a bunch of LEDs. Not really a LED display necessarily, but a bunch of LEDs around the sides of it.
Right.
It works really well. I gave it a buy on Before You Buy. So it does work. I just want to see what kind of mayhem I can actually get into with yeah. IFTTT.
If this,
that will
then
be
that.
Really fun. Yay, integration!
Integration's good. And this is part of what we talked about at CES, where as companies open up their standards, there'll be more interoperability and more
yeah.
likelihood that you will actually be able to do what you want with the device you want.
I love that
want.
People are being able to integrate things. This is good. Good news.
Now
good job, everybody.
Oh, and in case you didn't see it, big news this week was that somebody got drunk, flew their drone... flew apparently their buddy's DJI
oh, no.
drone over towards the White House, hit a tree,
oh,
drone
no.
hits the ground. You know, Secret Service basically says, do not worry, it's okay, it's not a threat.
Oh,
and then
no.
DJI is like, oh, well, we've shut down GPS so nobody can fly our drones in DC, period, which is very similar to how DJI uses GPS to lock down drones to keep them from flying your airports. But that doesn't actually lock down drones anywhere else, or if you turn the GPS off, or other brands of drones.
Yeah.
This is something that
this
people
is just
have,
one brand.
Yeah, this is something people have speculated about as, you know, something that, and I shouldn't call them drones, I should call them quadcopters or something like that. But obviously this isn't going to carry a big payload.
No.
but the larger, like the 8-rotor drones, mm-hmm. people are carrying like 22-pound payloads on that, and that's a lot of weight. So
Jeez.
It looks like the Secret Service is going to be adjusting the way they detect things. Because, like, apparently, I guess their radar is set up for tracking big things like
yeah.
planes and missiles and not little things like drones.
I was kind of expecting something, but won't that get like false positives like balloons and things like that because
Robins.
It's right next to the mall?
I don't know. This is messy and complicated. I mean,
it's
they
very
had a,
complicated.
Down north of Tijuana, just over the American border, I guess they had like 11 or 15 pounds of meth fell out
yeah.
of the sky on a drone. So, you know, the street, in the immortal words of William
oh,
Gibson, finds its own uses for things.
But that's always going to happen. Ask at techthing.com, of course, if you guys have questions or comments about what we just discussed on the show. But let's go ahead and take a break and find out what's going on with Hack 5.
Yo, Darren.
Coming up on Hack 5, we're securing all of the data coming out of Android phones through SSH tunnels. It does require root, but it's a lot of fun. Plus, Shannon has some Arduino code that makes toasters turn into Cylons. Check it out over on Hack 5.
We're back and it's now time for a rapid fire round. So this is where we will try to give you three different answers to three different questions, give you three different recommendations, or review three different products in less than a minute each. Are you ready?
Yes.
Patrick's got three quadricopters for you.
Oh my goodness.
For everyone.
Ready? Go!
I'm ready.
Okay. So I'm going to get all Goldilocks and the Three Bears for you. We went through three quadcopters before we found an entry-level one that kind of was just right. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the glorious Parrot AR Drone 2.0 Elite Edition.
I know that.
You don't need the Elite Edition. Just get the regular edition. It's the big foam quad. It's got a built-in 720p by 30 frame per second camera. It looks impressive, especially with this big old clover leaf wrapped around it. And it is. Parrot's doing things differently from anybody else because they are using your cell phone to control it, which allows you to get all sophisticated. 10 to 15 minutes flight time, 60 plus minutes to recharge a battery. It stabilizes itself. It can fly well over 100 feet if you turn the caps off because you can control sort of flight heights and stuff inside of this.
Yeah.
It's easy to swap in more batteries. Wi-Fi controlled, so you basically log your phone into the AR drone using the FreeFlight app on iOS or Android. And you know, you tilt your phone to control the drone. You definitely want absolute control on. Otherwise, when you turn the drone around, you'll tilt it and it'll tilt opposite. Absolute control will kind of make whichever direction you tilt the phone here, make the plane. The quadcopter tilt itself over there.
Yeah.
Does a really good job stabilizing itself, but nobody but Parrot uses this interface. It's easy to record and post video, but it's laggy. On my Moto G with Android, it was impossibly laggy. It's a little expensive for a first drone. It's $300. Factory 1,000 milliamp batteries are $40 each, $20 if you can find them on sale. Factory 1,500 milliamp hour batteries are $50 each. There are less expensive, higher milliamp hour third-party options. A lot of cool things going on with this, but when you decide to move on, you're going to have to relearn everything because the rest of the drone universe uses standard RC-like controllers.
Cool.
Which brings us to the second drone. And I should also say the foam on this, Seamus was really upset because like the second night we took it out, we managed to hit things so hard that the foam ripped.
Then
of course, then as soon as it starts touching things, it doesn't fly as well. You can get replacements, but it's an interesting idea, but it's a little proprietary. Mm-hmm. You're kind of locked into the Parrot environment if you move forward. So this is the AirHogs Helix X4. It's foam wrapped. Little tiny propellers, which makes them pretty loud, but it's very soft and it's very tough. So if you hit yourself with it or run it into something in your house, it's pretty forgiving. It's like flying a couch. It really is. That was Darren's quote. There's a big green stunt button and it's standard flight control. So if you learn how to fly on this, you'll be able to transfer to something like a DJI Phantom or any kind of drone you want to build. There's an internal rechargeable battery, which I hate. You're either going to hack this or you're going to plug this into a USB charger using its weird, impossible to find cable and wait 40 to 60 minutes to charge it between flights, especially if you use the charging cable that's built into the remote control. There's no replacement parts for it, which is fine if you use it in the house until somebody steps on it.
No.
It's about $60, $65 in Target or online. I think I would like this 80% more if you could swap batteries into it.
Yeah.
But when you have, even if you're an adult, when you have a kid outside and they get to fly for like 7 minutes and then it stops and it's like, okay, we'll go charge it for an hour. You can come back and they give you this look. So at this point, Darren was like, you need a Hubsan X4.
This guy.
These things are amazing. They are super cheap.
I kind of like how you stuck it in a Tupperware.
It's kind of funny, right? So, yes. The reason you do this is because if you stuff a little quadcopter in my backpack from hell, it gets crushed and all the parts get lost. It's fast, it's responsive, it uses standard flight controls, although it looks like sort of a giant game controller. 5 to 7 minute flights are pretty normable, that's a new word for me. You swap in batteries, the battery kind of like plugs into the housing.
Oh, that's cool.
There's no bumper from the factory, so you have to buy this protection ring. They cost a whopping $2. A crash pack, which has a spare body and extra rotors, because if you hit things hard enough, the rotors will pop off, and you pop a fresh rotor on. That's 15 to 20 hours. It's got props, motors, a battery, a body.
$15 to $20?
That's 15 to
bad.
$20. The best thing, though, is I picked up a 5-pack of Tenergy 3.7 volt, 380 milliamp hour batteries for $23.
Nice.
So now we've got like a half an hour to 40 minutes of flying time instead of just having 7 minutes of flying time. So this is $42. They have larger versions with camera on them. But the nice thing, this is like $40. By the time I bought like the crash pack and the batteries, it was up around $80.
Wow.
But that's not that much more expensive than this, and I can fly for 5 to 8 times as long every time we go to the park.
So you'd recommend the
Hubsan X4.
Awesome. Yeah, this and we'll have links cool. to those in our show notes too.
Yeah, well, kind of we're thinking about this. You want something that's going to be a stepping stone to a bigger drone, or yeah. you want something that's cheap enough, I'm going to try to look at the right camera now, that if you decide this drone thing is stupid, you haven't dropped several hundred dollars to find that out.
Very true.
I'm just saying. And this is pretty easy and pretty fun.
Those are cool.
Yeah, Hubsan X4 available on Amazon.com. You're going to have to fight my son for that. And if you have a quick question for us, it can be anything. Tweet at TechThing, post on Facebook.com/TechThing, or email us, ask@TechThing.com, and we'll do our best to answer it for you. Uh-huh. Hey, let's take a moment to thank one of our sponsors. Then we're going to show you how to set up two-factor authentication for your password manager. This episode of TechThing is brought to you by viewers like you. If you're enjoying the show, please consider donating to our Patreon at patreon.com/techthing. You can donate a nickel, a dime, or even $5 per episode, and that contribution goes directly back into the show. And remember, if you can't donate, no worries. We'd love it if you shared the show with your friends, subscribed on YouTube, or just sent us your questions on your favorite social network. Thank you so much for supporting TechThing. Before we move forward, there's one more thing I want to tell you. RSS feeds are hitting this week, so you'll be able to subscribe through iTunes, your TiVo, your whatever your favorite podcatcher is, you'll be able to download the show.
All the things.
So thank you to everyone who supported us on patreon.com/techthing, because y'all made that happen. Mm-hmm. Got a question from Samuel who writes in, I noticed that LastPass has drives or devices that you can plug into your computer to enable two-factor authentication. These will come with a premium subscription to LastPass. Are these my only options, or are there third-party devices that work with LastPass? Okay. And for those of us who are new to two-factor authentication, what is that?
That basically means that you're going to use two different authentication types to get into your account.
So I type in my password for Gmail, mm-hmm. and then it sends a special code to my phone,
exactly.
and only then can I get logged
That's
in.
That's one version. Okay. Another version is called one of these little guys. This is called a FIDO U2F authentication key. It's by YubiKey, so that's what I use to log into my Gmail. So that's another option that you have. There's a bunch of them. It's basically something you know and something you have that can be two-factor authentication.
So basically, I would need your password and this to log into your Gmail.
Yep, something I know and something I have.
Cool.
Yeah, there you go. So the short answer to your question is, yes, those are your only options at this time. I'm sorry. Ooh. It's not my fault. So LastPass does offer the ability to use 2FA with physical devices, such as the YubiKey, which is what I have. But these are the only ones that will currently work. They actually have a listing over at their website, and I have that pulled up on my computer over here. The multi-factor options that they have Duo Security, Google Authenticator, all the way down to Transact Authentication. Those are free. Ooh. Once you get into the physical versions of authentication, right. including fingerprint, the Sesame multifactor, RSA is on here, YubiKey, those are all going to cost you a little bit of money. Premium is $12, so that's what I use to be able to use my little FIDO YubiKey. So as new ones do come out, LastPass mm-hmm. will probably add them to the list. As you do, but the two companies, they'll have to work together to make right. the 2FA devices compatible with LastPass logins, and you also want to make sure right. that there's no back doors and stuff like that. So as new devices do come out, you'll be able to see them on this setup and on your account as well. Now, you can only use physical devices from that premium list, but hey, you can use Google Authentication as well. So I wanted to go ahead and take a little bit of time here, if you guys don't mind, to set up my two-factor authentication on LastPass, just so I can show you how to do it, because it's surprisingly simple.
And this is all about making your account more secure.
It
so
is,
that if somebody
yeah.
accidentally or nefariously steals your password, there's another hoop for them to jump through before they can access your information.
Yep. So yep. I do use a currently like super crazy complicated and hard to remember LastPass password for my account.
You used like you sent me a password. It was via LastPass. It was 20 characters of gibberish.
It was gibberish. That's it. It was numbers, symbols, and letters.
Which really is just not doable without a password manager.
And he was like, "Do I really have to type this out?" I'm like, "No, sign up for LastPass. It's easy.
And
you can share passwords. It's
I
great."
I was all LastPass.
So when you go into your LastPass account, mm-hmm. which you just click on the little icon over in your toolbar, and then you open up your My LastPass vault. You'll open it up where you'll see all your usernames back here in the background. There's a little button over here. It's a little grayed out right now because I've already opened it, but it's called Account Settings, and that'll bring you to the General tab in your Account Settings. Go over to the Multi-Factor Options tab, and this is where you'll have all the different options that are available. The ones in red, those are the ones that you currently have available, and then if you have these two available on your laptop, you can use those too. So I can use Google Authenticator. So if I click on that, I can click here to display a barcode, and then it'll ask me to re-enter my password. So I'll just type that in real quick. Hopefully I got it right. There we go. Okay. So I open it up, and it gives me this nice little code that shows up on the screen. Then I can grab my phone, and I already have Google Authenticator downloaded on here, and then I can add a new device. So I want to hit Setup Account, scan a barcode, and I just stare at my PC with my phone, and I'll go ahead and let it scan the barcode. There it goes. And once it's got it, it can include it in my list of known two-factor authentication devices. So now at the bottom, I have my LastPass account. Yay, so now I have two-factor set up with Google Authenticator. Now if I want to use the YubiKey instead, I can do that too. All I have to do is go down here to YubiKey number one, and I want to take my little physical device right here, my little keychain. So it has this little finger thing on here. It's not a fingerprint scanner, but it just notices the pressure from your finger. So I plug in the YubiKey into my computer, and if you haven't done it before, it's going to reinstall the YubiKey, and then hit Enable for YubiKey Authentication, go down here, and press the little button on the YubiKey, and it enters your YubiKey's key into the number one digit. And then you hit Update, and it's going to update with the YubiKey Authentication, and you type in your new password, or your master password, excuse me. So I type that in again. And then I hit confirm, and it's going to go ahead and save it. And that's it. So it's surprisingly simple to go ahead and set up two-factor authentication on your account for LastPass. Right. And since you save all your passwords in there anyway, it's incredibly worth it. Yeah. I do use the $12 a year version of the premium LastPass, and they do have this referral program too, so you can like get your mom and dad and everybody to sign up too, and then you get a free month, so that's pretty cool too. So I do that. Yeah. I did do some additional research as well, because I figured some people would probably ask about it. KeePass currently has a tutorial for setting it up manually via a laptop or a desktop, and they also have two-factor authentication plugins. So they have a whole bunch of information on their website as far as how to set it up there, and then you can find all the plugins over at keypass.info/plugins. And then 1Pass does not have two-factor authentication set up at this time. And if you Google it and read their blog entries about it, they're kind of stingy about it too. they don't think you need two-factor authentication for a password manager, and I understand their argument there, but I still like having two-factor authentication.
It's so, belt and suspenders. It's an extra layer of security.
Exactly. So to wrap it up, devices equal premium and apps equal free.
Yeah.
There you go.
Cola writes in, big fan and large person, misses Techzilla, but loves the potential of techthing.com. Thank you. I bought a Black Friday Amazon Unlock Fire phone. I love the specs, but the Fire apps, not so much. What's the safest way to add the ability to use Google Play apps and Amazon Fire apps on a Fire phone? Much love and best wishes for the new year. Cola.
Thank you, Cola.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny, right? So it's from the factory. You know, Amazon's like, we've created a special collection of Amazon apps just for you. And, you know, so there's Amazon Fire
and some people love it.
It's not the Google Play Store. It's different, right? And it turns out if you dig into the controls, you can allow non-Amazon app installation. You can sideload them by basically downloading the APKs through your browser.
Correct.
But at that point, you can't actually use any of the Google applications because Amazon decided they want to put that stuff from Google inside of their Amazon phone. Yeah.
Okay, so there is this third-party developer. His name is Inwiso, and he figured out that you can basically download the Google Play Store straight from straight to your Amazon Fire phone without rooting or voiding your warranty. So you basically, and I'll go ahead and run the video, and we'll have the video in the show notes because he shows exactly how to do it. It's really interesting. So you pretty much just need to use your Silk browser, need to go to a certain link that he mentions, download four different zip files, and then change them into APKs and basically install them onto your Fire phone. And then once you have all that included and completed, you'll then have Google Play and have the ability to download Google Play applications straight to your Amazon Fire phone.
Oh, interesting. So basically, it allows you to use all the Google services that Amazon tried to prevent you from using.
Yeah, weirdest thing. Like, no rooting required. He's just like, oh, yeah, just go to your downloads file and folder and just download the zip and change it to an APK. There you go. You're good to go.
It's not a bad deal at this point because it started out as $449 and now they're selling it for $199. It was a failure. I mean, let's just be blunt.
It's sad.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a thing.
Just be careful. Understand that if you completely screw this up, you can break your phone and have to start all over again. So be careful and make sure you follow the directions.
Absolutely. And we'll put that link in YouTube.com, our show notes there, and TechThing.com as well.
Yeah, it's nice also to see that the Amazon Fire Store is somewhat more expensive than it used to be.
Aw.
Well, you know, it is what it is. Oh, look. Hill Climb Racing.
Philboat.
Facebook.
Well, that wraps up this episode of Tech Thing. Of course, if you guys like it, subscribe over at techthing.com, youtube.com/c/techthing.
And before we go, we're going to remind you, have you backed up your system or your phone lately? If you haven't, go do it now.
It just takes an hour or two, maybe.
And remember, once in a while, put down the phone, step away from the screen, close the laptop, and do something analog.
Like, can I just tell you guys how excited I am about this card game?
Exploding Kittens.
Games. It's called Exploding Kittens. It's over on Kickstarter. We're very Kickstarter today. They're at $4 million, and their goal was $10,000. And it's a card game about exploding kittens.
With oatmeal graphics.
With oatmeal graphics. Yeah, it's made by the oatmeal graphics. Team. So you have kittens that explode, and you can defuse them with kittens, or you can play cat cards. Cat cards are like the ultra monster cats, so I'm obsessed.
And given that the vile cats in my house did something terrible to one of the
I want comforters. All the kittens. I want all the kittens.
I want to explode the kittens. Exploding kittens. This is what the internet was built for.
Meow.
I'm telling you. Meow. Hey, I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Shannon Morris.
We'll see you next week on Tech Thing.
Meow. Oh boy. It's just all the poops I give.
All the poops.
This is where we'll give you all the poops I give.
That's
Wow!